case is Lee Kane versus Secretary of HHS, 2008-5068.
Good morning, Your Honors. I last saw you, Judge Brooks, in Chicago 2 years ago. I'd like to say where we're going 2 years from now. I'm Judge Lowry. Judge Rader, it's entirely fitting that you're here today. Two of the cases upon which the respondent relies, rightfully so. Bryce decision and the Martin decision.
How did you get by Bryce?
And the Bryce decision was written just 4 years ago. I would not have been here today except for several recent Supreme Court decisions that call into question the use of the term jurisdiction. That say, you know, it doesn't really mean we've been sloppy in the past, we haven't always used it the right way. You have to really look at congressional intent to see what jurisdiction means. So I said, well, that's interesting. And then Judge Rady sat on another panel, a Markovich case. And that's a case that decided when the onset of symptoms are
manifestation. I think you need to review which case and remember the panel.
I want to say this because
you discuss the issues.
You've got Bryce, which has said no fees unless you filed a valid claim, and that it can't be valid if it's untimely. That's a jurisdictional issue. That's what Bryce said. And now, how do we get by that ruling?
It's a combination of factors. It is the recent Supreme Court decisions that I've listed in my brief to talk about jurisdiction as sometimes being derived by reference as being, as the case I quote in the J.R. Correct Sandy Brown's case, as shorthand judicial.
But J.R., couldn't one read J.R. Sand and Gravel to reinforce Bryce, that both dealing in a sovereign immunity context and reaffirming the notion that that particular context, the jurisdiction has a reinforced role?
It could be read that way, Your Honor. As a matter of fact, the respondent will certainly argue it that way. However, the number one purpose of the Vaccine Act is to stop civil lawsuits. That's the number one purpose. It's not to compensate individuals injured by vaccines. It's to stop lawsuits.
Some people have said that when someone starts off an argument on policy, it means they lose on the law and the facts. And you've got the law and the facts against you.
Your Honor, I can see that the law is against me. I am here today to give this court an opportunity to revisit something in light of these recent Supreme Court decisions and in light of the situation in today's vaccine program, where 5,000 autistic children sit, many of whom are poised to file civil lawsuits. And I'm arguing that these people, if they have a reasonable, good faith claim, should first be allowed to go into the vaccine program, as Congress intended. They intended inclusion in the program, not exclusion from the program, by use of a judicial tool such as jurisdiction, or waiver of sovereign immunity,
or national tool. It's a basic concept of the law.
It's a tool that judges, the daily work of this court, is to interpret in an imperfect Congress statute.
Well, tell us how we would interpret the Sand and Gravel case, to overturn Bryce, which is what you've got to do.
Now, all you can do is say, the court in John R. Sand and Gravel has said, take a closer look at the term jurisdiction, and take a look at it in light of congressional intent, and take a look at it in light of the words of the statute. And congressional intent is stop lawsuits. The whole Vaccine Act is to stop lawsuits, is to push people away from civil litigation into the vaccine program.
But there is no congressional intent, is there, regarding whether a plaintiff who lost for jurisdictional reasons, untimeliness reasons, can come in later on, also untimely, and say, I want the fees. I mean, there's no congressional intent on that.
I'm sorry, Rick, would you say that again? That's important. I didn't understand your question.
You're coming in asking for fees after a previous case, based on a previous case that has been dismissed because it was untimely.
Yes, sir.
There's no congressional intent on that.
Your Honor, the Section 12 of the Vaccine Act gives jurisdiction to the Court of Federal Claims over all proceedings where petitions are filed. It provides that attorneys are paid, win or lose, if it's a good faith filing with a reasonable basis. It says every aspect of the Act pushes people towards the program. It has no fault.
Has to be a properly filed claim, right?
But those are substantial issues, Your Honor. Whether it's properly filed is a substantial issue. You wrote...
What's the issue?
You wrote late. You sat on the market in Japan, and that panel talked about the onset of symptoms. It talked about timeliness issues. You did it just last year. There are 5,000 claims in the vaccine program on autistic children, and because of that decision, there will be hundreds of untimeliness hearings, just like in this case. There are going to be hundreds of them. And do you tell these people, read Bryce 2. You know, we said you don't get paid, so go sign a contingency fee agreement, get a lawsuit, and file a civil action. Or do you say to them, you have a chance to go into the program. That's what Congress intended. They didn't want you to file a civil lawsuit. And we'll pay your attorney's fees. You don't have to pay them, as long as it's reasonable and you've got a good faith basis for it. And that's what I'm asking you to revisit, to take a look at Bryce 2.
I think we understand your argument. You haven't asked to save any time, but if you wish, since you still have some time, you might have a bottle.
I appreciate it.
Ms. Richard.
Good morning. I'm Lynn Riccadella, and I represent the appellee, the Secretary of Health and Human Services. Your Honors, the facts of this case are undisputed, and the precise legal issue has already been decided by this court in Bryce, as you pointed out, Judge Rader. Attorney's fees and costs may not be awarded on a petition that is barred as untimely under the Act.
Is he right that this is going to send 5,000 to 500 cases to our district courts?
No, sir. We've been hearing this threat in our program now.
Well,
even
if he's right, isn't your answer that that's not an issue we can deal with?
That's absolutely correct. I mean, assuming for purposes of argument only that he was right, there are a lot of factual legal issues as to why that's incorrect. But assume for purposes of argument only that he's correct, that doesn't change the language of the Act. It doesn't change what the court's focus is today, and that is whether or not petitions that are barred as untimely, attorneys can recover attorney's fees. Certainly, Section 15 of the Act, which authorizes attorney's fees, Section 15 cannot be construed to authorize an award of attorney's fees on a petition filed under the Act when, in the case of an untimely petition, such a filing is specifically prohibited by another provision of the Act.
You're saying it wasn't a petition filed under Section
15? That's absolutely correct. Section 16A2 states in very strong terms, no petition may be filed unless it meets the limitations period.
But it was filed.
It was filed, but
it was untimely.
It was not timely. So Congress is saying there should be some due diligence done on the part of petitioners and attorneys before they bring a claim. They should inquire whether or not the case is timely. And I realize that that's not always going to be obvious up front. However, in this case, it should have been. Once these records came in.
Yeah, but I don't understand that because the attorney's fees provision under the Vaccine Act gives attorney's fees even if the petitioner loses.
That's correct.
But it sets the standard of reasonable good faith.
That's correct, but it's
so,
also...
I don't think the other side is advocating that even if it's filed in bad faith or it's unreasonable with respect to timeliness, that attorney's fees wouldn't come into play in any event.
Well, Section 15E1 that authorizes attorney's fees is strictly tied to the filing of the petition. And Section 16A2 says you cannot even file your petition. You may not file a petition for compensation.
No, but that's not my point. I was responding to your argument that suggested this. I mean, we're talking only about the award of attorney's fees where someone reasonably in good faith thinks the petition they have filed is timely,
right,
and it turns out for whatever reason that it's not.
Right. Correct. However, but I don't think you can't divorce Section 15 from Section 16A2. Section 15, the awarding of attorney's fees, whether or not the petitioner is awarded other compensation, whether or not the special master finds that there is a vaccine injury, any compensation awarded under the program is tied to the filing of a petition, and that's the express language of Section 15.
What about the idea that subsequent Supreme Court decisions have, if not overruling Bryce, changed the law?
Well, as we point out in our brief, Your Honor, the Supreme Court decisions cited by petitioners in this case are an opposite. Most deal with issues of court-prescribed rules of practice. And as the Supreme Court in Bowles pointed out, much of the cases that were relied upon by appellants in this case, the Supreme Court in Bowles distinguished, and Judge Miller also distinguished all of the cases that the appellants rely upon as being inapposite or else expressly overruled by J.R. Sand. I mean, J.R. Sand, you asked how can petitioners get around J.R. Sand. It's our position that they can't. I mean, yes, I acknowledge that the Tucker Act and the Vaccine Act are separate acts. However, they're both dealing with the Court of Federal Claims and suits against the government for monetary damages. They both have the language that claims cannot be filed if they do not meet the statutory requirements. They are both tied to, they're both limitations on the waiver of sovereign immunity. So I think that the J.R. Sand is completely appropriate for the Vaccine Act, and appellants simply cannot get around that holding. And Mr. Conway talks about here today in his brief about congressional intent. Well, congressional intent is clear, and that's the language of the Act. Certainly, Congress did not intend to award attorneys fees in claims that they did not want brought in the first place. He also talks about how the stakes are far different today than they were in 2004 when the court decided Bryce. Well, there's but one interpretation of the Act, and that's the correct one. The interpretation of a statute does not change given the way the wind is blowing in a given year. And the court in J.R. Sand pointed that out when they talked about really the sacrosanct nature of stare decisis. And this court has already decided this issue, first in Martin and again in Bryce. And I think the admonition of the Supreme Court in J.R. Sand is particularly apt here today. Another rationale of the court in J.R. Sand is they looked at the court's long interpretation of finding that Section 2501 of the Tucker Act was jurisdictional. I will say that, as I mentioned before, this court now has looked at Section at whether or not attorney's fees can be awarded in claims that are untimely or claims that are barred jurisdictionally, and now two times we've held attorney's fees cannot be awarded. So there is stare decisis. Another issue to keep in mind is in Bryce 1, this court talked about congressional intent and whether or not equitable tolling applied to 1682. And they specifically talked about the language in the legislative history that Congress wanted claims litigated in the vaccine program to be expeditious and quick, and that to avoid collateral litigation. And if equitable tolling were applied to Section 1682, there would be a lot of collateral litigation. Well, I propose to you that's exactly what would happen if appellant's argument proves successful in this case.
Their argument is that they ought to be able to have an incentive to hire attorneys. Attorneys ought to have an incentive to do reasonable cases in good faith, even if the timeliness rather than the merits are at issue.
But if every claim that's filed, and if it turns out to be timely, if petitioners are filing attorney's fees and costs for their attorneys, then we're going to be saddled with, was it reasonable? Had proper due diligence been done before they filed their claim? What is proper due diligence? It's going to take time away from actually litigating and having the special masters decide claims that were properly filed, that were timely filed, and instead they're going to be this argument of how much attorney's fees should be awarded. Was it reasonable? You know, Conway talks about all the timeliness hearings that are going to result in autism litigation. Well, first and foremost, this is not an autism case. And second of all, there is no timeliness.
It's not what case?
This is not an autism case.
Autism.
There was no timeliness hearing in this case. Once the records came in, it was clear. The case was timely. So this is not a case that's illustrative of the argument there's going to be hundreds, if not thousands, of timeliness hearings. I submit to you that's not the case. I do acknowledge that there will be timeliness hearings in many autism cases, but not the hundreds of thousands that have been argued here today. So if there's no further questions, for the reasons discussed today and in our brief, we respectfully submit that this court should affirm Judge Murphy's session.
Thank you very much. Does Mr. Conway have any rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor. First of all, this case was not an autism case, but it was a mercury case. It was the Mercer case. This is why the very suspected. And autism, which is where these timeless hearings kind of take place, is a very insidious disease. It's very difficult to control.
It's well irrelevant to the issue before.
It's relevant to the issue that there will be timeless hearings because there was so much gray area here. And many of these people, if Price 2 stands, who have valid claims, who would be invited to the program, will not have their day.
You're asking us to recommend to our full court, is all the panel can do, to take this case on bond to overrule Price. That's what you're asking.
I'm asking you to do that, Judge, because these thimerosal cases pose a very real threat to civil litigation. And I guarantee you, there are a bunch of decisions in the Court of Special Masters about to come down. It's been tried, do these vaccines cause or contribute to autism? A bunch of these are going to come down. They're going to come down, so it's going to have a big impact. Mostly, attorneys in the vaccine program with these autism cases knew nothing about the program. They took their clients. They wanted to sue years ago, but they were forced into the program. It's a real threat. One case, just one case, it caused millions and millions of dollars in defense costs. It's a real issue this court must address, and that's why I'm bringing it to you. This is the primary purpose is to prevent lawsuits, and this will inspire lawsuits. Thank you.
Claims, Conway, the case for taking on the vote.
All rise.